And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today, we're going to be examining the witch doctors of the pharmaceutical industry. The witch doctors. Now, some people say, now I see Tex Mars is going to go off to excess once again. Witch doctors of the pharmaceutical industry? The drugs, the prescription drugs and other drugs, legal and illegal, witch doctors? Now, that just cannot be. But, dear friends, stay with me today, because in this hour, I will prove to you these people are indeed into sorcery, into witchcraft. And I'm not only talking about the pharmaceutical industry, which is a multi-billion dollar business, but also the secret agencies of our own federal government, who I believe could just be making many more billions of dollars off of the illegal drug traffic than even the largest of the drug manufacturers. Who really is behind the plague of meth labs, cocaine, LSD, heroin? Could it be the Central Intelligence Agency? Could it be the Illuminati are profiting from the wrecking of men's and women's and children's minds and bodies? Has the whole world been driven insane by poisonous drugs? Are these the chem spray airplanes that we're beginning to see across this country, is that part of the plot to destroy people's minds? Could they even be adding substances into our water supplies? And what about our children? Are they already receiving drugs that will make them nothing more than crazed animals or docile slaves, obedient slaves, in tomorrow's new age world? Well, stay with me, because we're going to be looking at this area and we're going to give you a lot of evidence. But first of all, I want to take you to two very ancient sources. And I think you'll find these quotes quite interesting. The first one comes from a Roman writer of almost 2,000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius. But he said something that I found, well, quite fascinating, and maybe you will too. He said, and listen to this, and think about your own situation as you do. He said, the object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane. I think that's interesting. The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority. Well, that's what most people do. They want to follow after the Joneses and do what the Joneses do and say, and they want the newest car, the newest clothes or jewelry, or watch the latest television program so they can be like everybody else. They're just conformists to the world. They want to be on the side of the majority. Now, I propose that many listeners to this radio program, Power Prophecy, are not in that category, because you've already proven you're a rebel against the world and a follower of God's truth by listening to this program today. Did you hear me? You are a rebel to the world, because the Bible says that true believers are at enmity. They're at war with the world. You cannot make peace with the world. I mean, that's like trying to hug a guy that's got 5,000 daggers glued to his body, all pointed outwardly. Try to embrace the guy. It's like one of these, what they call the Maiden of Iron or whatever, the the Inquisition torturers would put you in, and they closed the mummy-like casing, and of course there were spikes in it that killed their victims. That's how they met their demise. But think again. The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane. What Aurelius was saying, that most people are insane. Do you want to join their ranks, or would you like to be in the minority? Jesus said only the few would find that narrow gate. I think I would like to be one of those few. I don't want to be in the ranks of the insane. And if this entire planet has been turned into an insane asylum, I'd like to escape. And you know, they're making the door smaller and smaller. And it's like some of these movies you see, the passageway into the cave or the cavern becomes smaller and smaller the deeper you go into it. Jump into the rabbit's hole of America today and find out that things get crazier and crazier. And you know, that's exactly what should be expected, because we turn again to the source of all wisdom, which is the Holy Bible. Revelation chapter 18 prophesies of mystery Babylon in the last days. And John was given a vision from God, and he sees this Babylon the Great, and it's fallen. And listen to what this angel that came down from heaven told him and what he saw. Verse 2 of chapter 18 says, and he cried, that is the angel, cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Some might say that applies to America today. Verse 3 says, for all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. She has a cup in her hand, and there's filth and abominations in this cup, says Revelation 17. And otherwise, in the Bible, the prophets tell us that the nations, having drunk out of the cup of the woman, the harlot of Babylon, have become insane. They're driven mad. Of course, in this cup are all kinds of filth and abominable things. But I believe one of those things, this wine, this poison of the wine that drives people mad, has to do with drugs. The very word pharmaceutical comes from the Greek pharmakeia, which means literally sorcery. Drugs is interpreted in the Greek or pharmaceuticals as sorcery, as magic, divination, devilish craft of witches. I wonder why they came upon that word. I wonder what the Bible might be telling us here about the wine of her fornication, that she has this filth in the cup. I was reading just this week in the Austin American Statesman, but it was from the Los Angeles Times. It was spread across the nation. You probably read it. It's on television. A new study by researchers shows that the diagnosis of bipolar disorder in children and adolescents has risen 40-fold just since 1994. 40 times children are being diagnosed today, 40 times as much with something called bipolar disorder. It says here researchers attributed the dramatic rise to doctors over-diagnosing the illness. The report was in the journal Archives of General Psychiatry, said bipolar disorder was found in 1,003 of every 100,000 office visits from children and adolescents. That's 40 times as much as back in 1994 and 95. The number of diagnoses, imagine this, these children go to see the doctor for some little problem, and they come out with this diagnosis that frightens the bedickens, and I use that term because it's an ancient term meaning the devil, frightens the bedickens out of parents because the number of diagnoses of bipolar disorder rose from an estimated 20,000 in the mid-90s to 800,000 in a most recent year. 800,000 children in America, their parents are being told, well, he's suffering from bipolar disorder. That's a malady that didn't even exist 25 years ago, I'm sure. 800,000 kids a year being told you've got bipolar disorder, but we can fix it with this drug, this new drug. Oh, yeah. I was listening to the Neil Bortz radio show. I don't agree with everything Neil Bortz says, but I was listening to it. I like a few of his libertarian views. And he did graduate from Texas A&M, a Texas university. Let's give the guy some credit. And he said, today we've got these school children, a class of school children from a school here in Atlanta, Georgia, visiting with us. He said, you know, I have a question to ask. And there was the teacher, you know, and she brought her kids to the radio studio, which was very nice to see what was going on at a radio studio. And he asked the kids, he said, hey, I want to know something from you. And I guess the number of their parents were there. How many of you kids have been diagnosed with this, you know, hyperactive disorder, ADD, and have been prescribed the drug called Ritalin? He said that out of about 30 kids, 28 raised their hands. They were taking Ritalin right then. One classroom at random, 28 or so out of 30 kids were taking this drug, Ritalin, for their hyperactivity. I was reading in a medical journal a couple years ago, and this big doctor expert said that as many as 96% of American children were afflicted with ADD. Huh? They're hyperactive. They can't control their emotions and their movements of their hands, and that's why they're misbehaving in school and all of these things there. 96% have ADD. Oh yeah. 96%, only 4% were behaving kids. Now let me say something, dear friends. I remember very specifically when I was, I think about the second or third grade, and there was a little meanie behind me, and he kept jabbing me with a pencil. Jabbing me in the back with a sharp point of the pencil. You know how it is when you're a kid. Just always a little bully or a meanie. And of course, when the teacher would look around, he'd always put his pencil down, look like a little angelic creature. Well, I had enough of that finally, so I got my pencil out, and I turned around and just wonk, jabbed him right in the hand, or the, you know, the wrist area. I was trying for his body, but I missed. You know, he put his hand up, and I got him pretty good there. Exactly at the time, the teacher looked back and saw me doing it. Now, the kid had jabbed me 20 straight times. And, you know, you bad boy, Tex Morris, get over there in the corner. She made me sit in the corner. Of course, it was very embarrassing, you know. Fortunately, they didn't have dunce caps, but it still was very embarrassing to sit in the corner. I was the bad boy. She caught me and didn't, and I tried to say, well, you know, Mrs. Brown or whatever her name was, he did it first. He did it about 20 times. And not only to me, he was doing it to everybody, but a little girl next door, a little girl next door, a little boy, you know, three, you know, he'd run, even he'd make a little run for it and jab people. And, but she was writing on the board, blackboard, never saw it. But I learned something there. It doesn't matter how many times somebody jabs you. It doesn't matter how much they misbehave. You don't do it. I got caught. He didn't get caught, but so what? I deserve to sit in the corner. That's the way life is. Somebody does you wrong, it doesn't mean you can go do them wrong. Even Jesus said, you know, they slap you on one cheek, will turn the other cheek. Now, I think there's a little bit of a very strong principle there. Well, a little bit, a whole lot. So, in any case, hey, I know that kids can misbehave. But even that kid, let me tell you something. It was only right that I go sit in the corner. But I think it would have been right, too, for somebody to have that kid, you know, take his pants down and whack him a few times. And you say, well, you're so hard. You're so cruel, Tex. No, teach the little devils a lesson. Teach them to be little angels in reality. That's what the Bible says. Don't mistreat kids. Don't be cruel. But a little, you know, paddling every once in a while when they're very young might just do the trick. Okay? And at least give them a little bit of punishment in one way or another. Restrict them here. Do this to them. Don't make them go without dinner. That's sort of silly. But it might be good to go to their room and think about things a little while. And take away certain advantages that they might have. Absolutely. The point about it is, don't take them to the doctor and say, my kid was jabbing people with a pencil in class. You got a drug you can give him? Yeah, I got Ritalin right here. He's obviously, let's diagnose him with bipolar disorder. The kid's a little depressed. He's a little depressed. Oh, well, let's give him this new drug for bipolar. Depressed, yeah, he just made C minus on a test or D. Or F, and he did because he didn't study. That's why he's depressed. You know, friends, a lot of us are depressed over things. Why, when I was in the fourth grade, Sally, my girlfriend, you know, after about a week or so, she found another beau. Well, that sure depressed me for, you know, a couple of days till Susie around the next classroom smiled at me, and suddenly I had another girlfriend. What happened to Sally? I don't know. I forgot her real quick. I was depressed. I probably went home all moody and morose. And, you know, my mother could have said, you poor boy, you have bipolar disorder. Let's just take you to the doctor and get you some pills. Friends, parents are absolutely insane today. And they have child psychiatrists and they're just busy as beavers today. Fixing up the kids with drugs. 800,000 bipolar disorder, a disease so-called that didn't even exist. And adults have it too. I know a gentleman right now who he's been off work about 6 months or so. Just depresses him to go to work. But he's out doing other things. He plays his guitar. He goes on trips out to the beach. He's done all kind of things. But he's got bipolar disorder, the doctor told him, and he doesn't want to go to work. Hey, there's a lot of people that must have that bipolar disorder, because there's a lot of lazy louts out there that don't want to go to work. Now, I know you're saying, Tex, you just don't understand. I understand. I understand people that are depressed and go in and get Prozac and all these other drugs, and pretty soon they're nothing but vegetables. Yeah, I understand it real well. Sorcery, witchcraft, mind control. A witch's brew. I want you to understand something. The ancient mystery religions of Babylon, Rome, Greece. That's where these drugs came from. These mind control drugs. Let me give you some examples of that. In Alexander Hislop's incredible expose of Mystery Babylon, with thousands and thousands of references, here's what he says about some of the mystery religions, and especially the worshipers of Baal. Baal is mentioned in the Bible. The fire god. The devil god. He says, listen to this on page 166 of The Two Babylons, written way back in 1832 by one of the world's greatest researchers into the mystery religions of Babylon. He says, listen to this now. He says, now the worshippers of Baal-Samin, Lord of Heaven and Lord of Oil, that's what they call him, the Lord of Heaven. He was the devil god, Baal, or Baal-Samin, were anointed in the name of their god. It was not enough they were anointed with oil and spittle. They were also anointed with magical ointments of the most powerful kind. And these ointments were the means of introducing into their bodily system such drugs as tended to excite their imaginations and add to the power of the magical drinks they received, that they might be prepared for the visions and revelations that were to be made to them in the mysteries. Drugs pharmaceuticals, ointments prepared for them so they could have visions and be introduced into the satanic mysteries of Baal Samin. He says, before consulting the oracle of Trophonius, they were rubbed with oil over the whole body. This preparation certainly concurred to produce the desired vision. Before being admitted to the mysteries of the Indian sages, that's the Hindus, the Indians, Apollonius and his companion were rubbed with an oil so powerful that they felt as if bathed with fire. This was professedly an unction in the name of the Lord of Heaven, that's the devil to them now, to fit and prepare them for being admitted in vision into his awful presence. Wow. The individual was called, not in vision, but in reality, to face the mystery of mysteries, his personal introduction into the world unseen and eternal. Thus, the pagan system naturally developed itself into extreme unction. Its votaries were anointed for their last journey, that by the double influence of superstition and powerful stimulants introduced into the human frame, their minds might be made receptive to the spirits and the gods. That's what you do now, but you go to a doctor, he gives you a prescription, you take it to a pharmacist, and then you have these mind control drugs and you're introduced into the mysteries and you don't even know it. And the spirits and the devils find you. Your mind is basically a machine waiting to be filled with a mechanism. And that mechanism is demon spirits who come in because your brain has been weakened by these potions of hell. In the book Occult Theocracy by a terrific researcher, Lady Queensborough, her real name was Edith Starr Miller, but you know over in England when you're married to a duke or a baron or a noble of some kind, they give you these fancy names. She was Lady Queensborough. She wrote this incredible book, Occult Theocracy. I think I'll be offering it in the ministry because it's, you know, it's 100 years old, but it's just as vital today as it was yesterday. She talks about how the Jewish Kabbalist and the Hindu gurus used the same techniques of drugs and wicked potions. On page 52 of her book, she says the Hindus use what they call a scientific book, the Agrokada Parikshay. Well, I hope I pronounced that correct. She said it would be impossible to enumerate the different drugs, ingredients, and implements that composed the stock in trade of a Jewish Kabbalist or Hindu magician. Think about that. You go to see a Jewish Kabbalist rabbi. I've got a drug for you. I've got a potion for you that'll help you in your introduction into the Kabbalah mysteries. Oh, yes. The Hindu gurus had the same thing. I talked to a Hindu disciple of one of the gurus, and she said, I can't believe that, and now she's a Christian. She said, I can't believe the things I did. They induced me to, because of these drinks they would give us in the temple, in the ashram in India where I was. She said, the guru would go to the top of these steps. There were like 100 steps, and he would sit on a throne. And we nobodies at the bottom seeking the wisdom of the guru would have to crawl up those steps one by one on our knees. By the time we would get to just 20 or 30 steps, our knees were bruised and bleeding. But we didn't mind because somehow our minds were clouded over with the drugs we had taken. She said, in this book, Lady Queensborough says, the standard Indian book on magic is the Upanishad. Therein is to be found a detailed description of methods available for producing catalepsy, somnambulism, hallucination, and ecstasy, even fatigue of the nervous system. This is what is known to the modern common sense mortal as yogi stuff. Yogi stuff. today, there are drugs for everything. Your sex drive lacking a little bit? Impotency? Well, Viagra. When you study the ancient mystery religions, even the tribal religions of Africa, the mystery religions of Greece, at Delphi in Greece, where they went into a cave, and they would have cooking a witch's brew of some kind of a drug formula, and the fumes would come up and overtake the celebrants of the ritual mysteries, and their minds would see hallucinations. We have today Indian tribes in America that use peyote, and in South America also that take of these hallucinogenic mushrooms. And some of them lick frogs, because frogs, some types of frogs secrete a certain potion of some kind. And so they have these hallucinogenic visions and fantasies. One of the Greek goddesses was named Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. There's a town in California named Ceres. And the word cereal comes from her, cereal. Her name was Ceres, the god of cereals, the god of agriculture, the goddess, I should say. But she was known as the red poppy. Her worshippers, who venerated the goddess Ceres, the goddess of agriculture and food, would partake of the red poppy. And what is that but heroin? And today in Afghanistan, the heroin is back. The poppies, the red poppies are growing. They're everywhere. It's the number one crop in the nation of Afghanistan. Now, when the Taliban were there, they were Muslims. And at least they knew a little bit more than we supposed American Christians know. They destroyed the fields, and anybody caught growing poppy or heroin was put to death. The Muslims said, we're not going to have this illegal drug traffic. But the minute the Americans took over and the Taliban was kicked out under President Bush, guess what? The heroin, the red poppies began to go everywhere, all over again. And now it's the heroin traffic is everywhere, all over the world from Afghanistan. How is it that we've got tens of thousands of troops in this nation of Afghanistan and we control the government there, and we're allowing all this heroin to be grown in all the fields openly? And yet we've got satellites overhead that can see below and see all the fields. We've got aircraft, drones with, you know, that have the most fancy cameras that can actually photograph the letters on a golf ball from miles up, but we don't want to do anything about it. No, because the CIA is running the whole drug operation, running the whole heroin traffic for the whole world. Everybody knows that. Bush is behind it. Why do you think that when you study the history of the Order of Skull and Bones, and you have to go to books like my book, Dark Majesty, The Secret Brotherhood, you'll find that the Skull and Bones members, when they're initiated in a coffin, totally nude, they take drugs. And not only that, but they're given names, secret names that stay with them for life. Do you know what George Herbert Walker Bush, what name he was given? Poppy. I wonder why. I believe it's because the Bush family has been responsible for much of the drug industry in America, and I'm talking about criminal drugs like heroin and cocaine, for decades. And they call him Poppy. I'm not talking about his old man. I'm talking about him as a young college student. They called George Herbert Walker Bush Poppy. And now you know why. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power Prophecy. We're exposing, we're unmasking today the witch doctors of the pharmaceutical industry. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, dear friends, Tex Mars again here. It's always great to be with you each week here on Power of Prophecy. We always, in the middle of our programs, we offer a book or a video to you, or maybe some audio tape or CD. And today I would like to mention our newest, but also it's sort of an old thing, but we've updated it, and boy, is it packed. It's 95 minutes. It's a video documentary. It's me speaking. And we've got a lot of incredible pictures for you on it that you just won't believe. It's called Monuments and Magic of the Illuminati. Monuments and Magic of the Illuminati. Strange statues, strange monuments, strange buildings going up around America. What is that all about? They built a great statue to a goddess and put it in a temple to Zeus in Nashville. They built a huge Great American Pyramid, you know, just north there in Tennessee, in Memphis. Of course, there's Washington, D.C., and all the monuments of evil there. I don't know if they should call the White House a White House or a Black House of Mystery. And across America, there are these strange monuments. And this video will explain the reason for some of those. And then the second part of it is called Alchemical Processing of Humanity. We've offered books by Michael Hoffman before, you know, about the secret societies and the psychological processing of humanity. And this video will take you a little bit deep into how they're controlling and programming our minds through symbols and through these statues and through these mysterious monuments going up across America. Now, these were two videos that we did some years ago, and I watched them again recently, and I said, wow, they were out of print. I said, we've got to bring those back. We've got to. And I know you're going to enjoy them because I enjoy exposing the darkness. It's just fun. It's fun to expose the devil. It's sad we have to do so, but the Bible says, have no part with the works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Wow. By the way, that's not a suggestion. That's a commandment. We are to reprove. That is to rebuke them. That is to expose them. Paul said, for we are not ignorant of the devices of the devil. Well, unfortunately, many people are ignorant of the devices of the devil, but you don't have to be. Monuments and Magic of the Illuminati, 95, 96 minutes in length, $25, two parts. You might want to watch one time, about 45 minutes or 50 minutes, and then come back and watch the second part. It'd make a great two-part series for, you know, maybe like a Bible study session at your home or at church. Monuments and Magic of the Illuminati, around 95, 96 minutes. It's available on either DVD or VHS video. So take your pick. VHS video. Be sure to specify. We don't want to send you the wrong one unless you have both a VHS and DVD, and then we'll just send you what we'd like. But if you want to choose, then we recommend that. Tell us whether you want DVD or VHS. Monuments and Magic of the Illuminati. Here's how to get that video set. These two videos in one, really two videos in one for $25. Please add $4 shipping and handling, a total of $29, and send that by check, money order, or cash to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 in the USA. Hey, you can call us in the continental United States and Canada, toll free, 1-800-234-9673, 1-800-234-9673. Please call during the work day because we like to sleep at night sometimes. So Central Standard Time, you know, 8 o'clock till 5:30 every day, Monday through Friday. We'll be right here for you. And a very friendly receptionist will get the information from you, and you use your charge card, MasterCard, Discover, Visa, and we'll take care of you. If you'd like our catalog, please ask for a copy. We do ask for a donation of $6 because it's a big catalog. It costs us a lot of money to print it. It'll have all of our products and such in it. You can ask for that as well. And that $6 will take care of even the shipping and handling. Okay, now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about witches and witch doctors in the drug field. Pharmaceuticals and then also illegal drugs. We're talking about the Order of Skull and Bones and its potential involvement in the heroin trade through its member, George Herbert Walker Bush, called poppy, and how under the Bush administration, the heroin fields are back in operation in Afghanistan. One wonders if, you know, maybe one of the big reasons we didn't go in Babylon was to get all the oil, and in Afghanistan to get those heroin fields jived back up again. Certainly, the Central Intelligence Agency has a big part in the drug criminal industry today. You know, I've studied the CIA involvement in this. Did you know that Dr. Gerald Hurd, that's H-E-A-R-D, and Willis Harmon, Dr. Willis Harmon of SRI International, a sort of a, well, I call it a mind control think tank out of California, Menlo Park, California. These are sort of intellectual mind type people. But Dr. Hurd was interviewed and by the World Future Society in its publication several years ago, and he admitted that he and others had been employed by the CIA in an attempt to seed America with LSD. You think that's impossible? No, it's not at all. Dr. Timothy O'Leary, remember he said, you know, plug in or whatever and, you know, get wired into drugs and tune out. He was a Harvard professor, but at the same time, he was being paid clandestinely by the CIA to promote LSD. Isn't that something? And he grew long hair and smoked marijuana and everything and said, man, everybody ought to take LSD. You can get in touch with the gods. You'll have visions, hallucinogenic visions and fantasies, and you can reach the other dimensions. Even the gods will visit you. Oh, indeed, they will. Timothy O'Leary was a paid agent of the CIA. And then we get, and so was Dr. Gerald Hurd. And they said it was an experiment by the CIA to see what would happen if they could get all the youth of America, or many of them, to taking all these mind drugs. What kind of experiment was that? Well, I can tell you what it is, friends. Don't you understand? They are diseasing, controlling the minds of millions of people. And it was a contrived plot to do so. Go to Google, the search engine on the internet, and look up what happened to Dr. Frank Olson, a government scientist. Early in this process of the CIA and the Defense Department studying the use of drugs, LSD, and others, Dr. Frank Olson was one of the researchers. And they said, well, we need more human subjects to take this. And, of course, they took in all these poor Army guys that had volunteered for experiments. They didn't know that they would become vegetables, many of them. And then they said, we don't have enough people to experiment with. And they purposely ingested in his food one of their own scientists to see what would happen to an intellectual man. Dr. Frank Olson was given LSD. I'll tell you what happened to him. He ended up jumping out of a room, of a building, high up to his death. The Secretary of Defense, Mr. Forrestal, disagreed with the Truman administration and its secret role in the founding of Zionist Israel. The Secretary of Defense, Forrestal, suddenly one day found that there was a team of people at his door. Here's the Secretary of Defense. What were they there for? They had a straitjacket. They put him in it. They took him to Walter Reed Hospital up to the 16th floor to the psych ward. They gave him LSD, and then they took off his straitjacket, and he dove out the window, or at least they said. Maybe they threw him out. They said he had a nervous breakdown. The Secretary of Defense. Then there's Jerry Garcia. You see, this band started up called the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead. And oh, they were into LSD and heroin, Mary Jane, or marijuana, everything you could imagine. And of course, all their songs were about psychedelic junk and you know, LSD and about devil, you know, I guess basically loving the devil and enjoying it all, the drug trips. And, you know, it was at first the Grateful Dead, their music wasn't very popular, but they just continued on the road. Who was funding these people? They didn't even have a record that was in the top 10, but yet they had all this money to go on the road. And they had a few hippies that ran around with them, groupies they called them, druggers. Their audience so grew and grew. You know, it's been proven that you can take a pitiful, ugly song and play it enough times on the radio, and after a while, people get to liking it. I'm serious. This is a proven fact. The more you listen to a certain kind of music, the more you'll like it. Sort of like an acquired taste. Some people say that's true of beer and other things you drink. You drink and you say, ooh, I don't like that. How could anybody like to keep drinking it? And pretty soon you start liking it. Especially if you drink a lot of it very quickly. But this is the same way with music. That's how they force people, you might say, induce us mentally to go for septic junk music. They just play it enough. They pay the, you know, disc jockeys and so forth, the record companies do, and they play this song over and over. After a while, you say, you know, I'm beginning to like that. And that's what happened to the Grateful Dead. People begin to say, I like that. But how did they get the money to last so long on the road? Well, now it's come out. People have gone to the Central Intelligence Agency because it's been so long now. Jerry Garcia died, what, in the last 6 or 7 years? The Grateful Dead, I guess, is still on the road. But their leader, Jerry Garcia, died. But people have went to the CIA and demanded, under the Freedom of Information Act, to find out what they had in their files on this guy, Jerry Garcia. Come to find out, he was a paid agent of the CIA. Now, all these Grateful Dead people, all these hippies and groupies, and thousands who bought their records, they were all, we're all anti-government. Hey, man, we hate the CIA. They're just a bunch of pigs. They're a bunch of trash, man. Well, yeah, we're the new counter generation. Yeah, we're counterculture. We hate the CIA and the police and all those pigs. What, they were listening to music put out by a guy paid by the CIA to spin off all this devilish psychedelic music and to feed them LSD and all these drugs. These stupid people out there with their long hair and their nakedness and their free sex didn't even know they were being had by the CIA. They were a bunch of nincompoops. Idiots. And they still are today. Taking their acid and they didn't even know it was being distributed by the federal government. Wanting to turn them all into morons. I was an Air Force officer, a commanding officer over in Wiesbaden, Germany, and I had some people, every unit had that took drugs. I remember one young man, I gave him an Article 15, which is like a minor court-martial. I said, you know, you're going to end up dead someday, young man. Yeah, they don't hurt you, marijuana, LSD, it doesn't hurt you. It wasn't long till my first sergeant came to me and said, hey, Captain, guess what? I said, what? He said, you remember Jackson? Yeah. He's in the hospital. I said, well, he's in the hospital. What happened? Got a broken neck. He's paralyzed. I said, when did that happen? He says, 3:00 today. He was in his dormitory room. He had taken a hit of LSD. And he said the spirits began to talk to him. And then he heard the voice of his dead father outside his window. His problem was he was up on the third floor. He opened the window and said, Dad, I'm coming, and jumped out and landed on the concrete below on his head, on his neck, broke his neck. And he's babbling like a fool. 3 months later, he was still babbling like a fool. He was out of his mind. The acid had burned his brain. He was gone. They shipped him back to the States. As far as I know, the last time I heard of Airman Jackson, he was a total idiot, drooling, sitting in a chair, 16 hours a day. LSD. Compliments of the CIA. Thank you. Friends, you have to understand that drugs of all kinds are being introduced into the minds of people today. Some say, well, marijuana doesn't bother me. Friends, I know what marijuana does. I've seen people. It makes them lackadaisical, lethargic, useless, morons.
Well, I'm able to do my work. I can drive even better taking marijuana.
Yeah, that's the problem. You're so stupid, you don't even know you got a problem. But every study has shown they're not as good in their reflexes as people who don't smoke marijuana. They can't think. And A students go to suddenly being D and F students.
Well, I'm sure it's not the marijuana I'm smoking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the marijuana, idiot. You know, H.G. Wells, who was part of the conspiracy, in fact, he wrote a book, The Open Conspiracy, also wrote some interesting science fiction books that I used to read, such as The Invisible Man and others. He once wrote a book, he says, someday there will be a control of the population by aircraft. Now, remember, this was before they had airplanes. Back in the 19th century, he says they'll have flying machines, and they will release these agents that put people to sleep, and then they'll wake up and it'll cause their minds to think different things. But you can conquer entire populations by spraying chemicals from airplanes. Pretty prophetic, wasn't it? Pretty prophetic. Then we have the anthrax. Talk about a drug. The anthrax that was released that killed several people. Remember, it was being mailed to some congressmen and such. You don't hear about that much anymore. I'll tell you why. I have an audio tape, a CD, that explains exactly who did the anthrax, that released the anthrax, the powder, and killed people. Who was it? Well, it was done by our own CIA and its Army agency at Fort Detrick. Biological Weapons Warfare Laboratory at Fort Detrick, Maryland. And it was done by a Jewish scientist working there. And then they tried to frame a Muslim scientist working there. Well, first of all, you asked the stupid question, maybe, or is it stupid at all? What are Jewish and Muslim scientists doing working at American biological warfare laboratories in Fort Detrick? Well, there you may find an answer that you won't like. For example, the Israel government, everyone knows, has been working on genetic bombs. A bomb that they can, you see, drop or introduce in Damascus, Syria, or Cairo, Egypt, or Tehran, Iran, and it would be like a poison gas, a biological weapon, and it would not destroy buildings and such. It would simply kill all the people of a certain DNA type. You know, like Arabs. However, they found there's a problem with it. They cannot refine it so it doesn't kill the Israelis too. And here's why, because they find that DNA-wise, the Arabs have as much ancient Israelite blood flowing through their veins as do the Jews of Israel. Because most of the Jews of Israel, probably a good 90%, did not come from Moses and Abraham even and you know, Jacob and all the other patriarchs. They were Khazars. They were Turkish Mongol stocks. They're Europeans. They're not even real Jews in terms of being of Israel. They call themselves Jews. But after all, Marilyn Monroe converted and called herself a Jew. Sammy Davis Jr., an African-American man, called himself a Jew too. But his relatives came from Africa. It could be that Yasser Arafat, or the head of the Mahmoud Abbas, head of one of the groups in Palestine, they might have more Jewish blood than the Jews have. It could be that President Ahmadinejad is more of a Jew than the Jews sitting in Tel Aviv, DNA-wise. So the genetic bombs don't work. They'd be killing their own people. They couldn't refine it enough.
No way. They found out something, so they just closed that chapter. Meanwhile, though, they've been developing things like anthrax and phosphorus bombs, biological and chemical, to kill people. And they dropped some of the phosphorus bombs on Lebanon as an experiment during the last go-round of the Israeli killing of the Lebanese people. And by the way, many of the Lebanese that they killed were Christians. But, you know, John Hagee doesn't care about that. Yeah, kill those Lebanese. But they're Christians. Oh, that's okay. They shouldn't be over there. What? Their family's been living there for hundreds of years. I think Jesus was a Christian too, Mr. Hagee. But maybe you've forgotten that. In fact, I think he founded the Christian church. And I believe they killed him too, come to think about it. Now, friends, this chem spraying that's going on, I don't know what's going on, but I have my suspicions about it. And you should too. Biosocial control, that's what they're after. Now let's go back to the pharmaceutical industry just a minute. You know, I don't want to mention it too much because, you know, Wanda may hear about it and get angry at me. But one time I used to be single. Many years ago, over 30 years ago, I was a single guy. And I dated, you know, in my turn back then. And, you know, every once in a while I might even date a pretty girl. Who knows? And I remember dating this girl. She was a college graduate. She graduated from the University of Texas. Very beautiful girl. Absolutely spectacularly gorgeous. And on my first date with her, you know, you always ask, you know, well, what do you do and all that? And she was out in the work world. She was a professional, drove a beautiful sports car and very prosperous. And I was very impressed, you know. I said, well, what do you do? She said, I'm a pharmaceutical representative. I said, oh, really? Well, what was your degree in at UT, at University of Texas? She said, English. I said, well, holy, this doesn't compute. You had an English degree at the university, but you're out there as a pharmaceutical representative. How did that happen? She says, well, they were recruiting for pharmaceutical representatives, and she says, and they make very good money. And she told me how much she made then. It'd probably be the equivalent of at least $100,000 today. And I said, wow, that's great. And she said, yeah. And then she laughed, and she, you know, some people who are very lovely know they're lovely. And she laughed, and she said, they hired me because I, you know, not only was I a university grad, but that wasn't the main reason why they hired me, because I was beautiful. Because of my looks. I said, whoa, hold on now. She said, yes, that's right. They did not want science graduates. They didn't want people with chemical degrees in chemistry or biology. They wanted pretty women. They wanted beautiful women to be their agents. She says, we have much better access to the doctor's offices. She says, when I go into doctor's practices, they pay attention to me. Oh, come in. Have a seat. They pay attention. They want to be around her. And then they'll buy the drugs. They'll recommend the drugs that she has from the pharmaceutical company. I was taken aback. I thought they would hire knowledgeable people that could understand what the composition of drugs and all those things. No! They didn't want to hire pharmacists to go out and sell drugs. They wanted to hire beautiful women so they could attract the doctors. Now, please understand, this was a very nice girl. She wasn't going out there seducing doctors. She couldn't help it because she was pretty. But the very fact is she was pretty got her an entrance into the doctor's offices, into the clinics, and she sold more drugs. I mean, they'd much rather a pretty girl to talk to sell them something than an ugly old guy. I'm talking about male doctors. You know, like straight male doctors. I found that interesting. Now, I remember that so many years ago, this pretty girl had told me that, and how that affected me, my thoughts on it. She says, now, I did learn the drugs. You know, I had to learn about them, and they're, you know, just by reading the literature, but I really don't have any specialized science training. But she was one of their top salesmen. I forget the name of the drug company back then. Serol, GD Serol or something. I can't remember. But it's interesting, isn't it? Now, I was reading the Wall Street Journal about 5 years ago, and here was this article. It says, pharmaceutical industry uses almost exclusively young women ages 22 to 30 as their representatives.
It said, if you're a young man, even a nice looking man, who's got a degree in a, you know, scientific field, don't expect to get hired by a big drug company to be one of the representatives. They don't want you. They're looking for beautiful girls. And it said exactly what this young lady had told me over 30 years ago. This was 5 years ago in the Wall Street Journal. That's how they sell drugs. Well, you know, sex sells, even though this girl was not putting out sex. She just, I guess, exuded sex. I don't know, just her looks, but to men that were captivated by that kind of a thing. You see the profit motive. You see what they were after. Did they have the best drug to prevent diabetes or arthritis? Maybe not, but their drug sold anyway because it was beautiful women doing the selling. This sort of gives you an idea of the pharmaceutical industry and what they're really all about, doesn't it? And then we have other drugs, the steroids. It's called roid rage. You read the story about the wrestler that killed his whole family, his wife and his young son. They say it was steroids, really? In the book Brave New World, Aldous Huxley talked about how they control people. Every day they would take a purple pill and whatever, you know. They had different colored pills, and everybody would take these pills. They were happy. They were made to be happy through drugs. Population control, of course, water supplies. Fluoride, they told us it was needed for teeth. No, it discolors people's teeth. But some people say it affects the mind. Perhaps. And everybody knows, friends, it's a sad fact today, and I am sick and tired of it. You visit nursing homes and you see people there that are just sitting like vegetables. Just sitting. Sitting. Why? They've been given psychotropic drugs. They've been given mind control drugs. Valium and all the others. Because, why? Because the nurses and the aides don't want to pay any attention to them. They want to treat them like vegetables. Come take your little pill today. They treat these old people. And I also know of some people that their families brought them back home and took them off those drugs. And you know what? They woke up. We thought our grandfather was senile. We thought his mind was totally gone. But after 2 weeks of not having the drugs that he got at the nursing home, he woke up. He's alive. He can think. He's smart as a tack. He's quicker than we are in brain-wise. He's beginning to read books again. He's creative. He's intelligent. He wasn't senile at all. It was the drugs he was taking. You know, I haven't even talked today, friends, about the chemotherapy that they give cancer patients. Oh, man, I could write books on that. I found it interesting. President Reagan, when he was in office, had prostate cancer. My wife, Wanda, recently talked to his doctor, the oncologist. You know why she talked to him? She wanted to find out why that doctor refused to give President Reagan chemotherapy. That's right. He refused to give President Reagan chemotherapy. Boy, there's a tale there. And then finally, we end with socialist medicine. Oh, candidate John Edwards, former senator, wants to put us all on socialist medicine. They'll choose the doctor, and that doctor will choose what pills you'll get. Can't you just see what's going to happen, friends? We'll all enter the sorcery industry. And after all, that's what the pharmaceutical industry is. That's what the CIA and its drug programs is all about. These people are witch doctors, and the whole world is drunken with their wine. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. My prayer, dear friends, is that you'll tune in each week during the same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.